Hello and welcome once again to Authors Audio. I'm your host, Jake D. Steele. Remember, you can listen to all our interviews by visiting our website at www.authorsaudio.com and click on the listen icon or the iTunes icon there and download the programs that way. I have with me today an author and doctor, Dr. Gary Ridenour, who attended Hiram College at the same time of Woodstock and the Kent State shootings. He was interviewed at numerous medical schools at that time that refused his application because they didn't like people that rocked the boat. Gary eventually attended medical school in Guadalajara, Mexico. He ran his own clinic there for the poor out of a Catholic Church clinic and sometimes sat and read up on a problem with the patient in the room. Dr. Ridenour did his internship in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and then moved to St. Louis to work on internal medicine. His current interest is educating everyone on the threat of the possible coming avian flu with his book called Pandemic. Now, the current strain of avian flu kills about 60% of the people who contact it in as little as 8 hours. In order for it to become a pandemic, the virus must mutate down to a less lethal but far more infectious form that can be spread from one person to another easily. Ridenour estimates a 1 in 3 chance of an avian flu pandemic in the near future. Though seemingly counterintuitive, Ridenour said the death rate will be highest among people 20 to 40 years of age. This is because they have the best immune systems. The horrible 1918 flu pandemic was an outbreak that killed 50 to 100 million people. Dr. Ridenour estimates this time up to 1 billion people could perish during a pandemic such as this, but not solely from the virus's lethal effects. Instead, Ridenour believes that many will not survive because of a disastrous infrastructure meltdown caused by the pandemic. It's my great pleasure to welcome to Authors Audio Dr. Gary Ridenour. Gary, how are you doing today?
Thank you so much. It's fun being here.
Well, Gary Ridenour, I want to thank you for coming to Authors Audio today to talk about your book, Pandemic, which is all about the possibilities of the avian flu, the H5N1 virus, mutating into a form that is transferable from human to human. And it gets pretty scary when you start looking at some of the facts that you lay out in your book. And we have had influenzas in the past, but this one sounds pretty scary too, as it could take a person out in as little as 8 hours. That's a pretty deadly form, all right.
Well, that's true. There's been over 10 pandemics in the last 300 years. And, you know, the 1918 pandemic wasn't really discussed very much until the last 4 or 5 years.
Well, maybe we could start simply, Gary, by just talking about the difference between a viral infection and a bacterial infection and how we treat each one right now.
Okay. First off, the genetics. The virus is very, very small. One virus, you can have to line up 25 million viruses to make 1 inch. The bacteria are larger, more complex, and have more genetic material in them. The virus basically is more primitive and sometimes more advanced because it has no locomotion, it has no reproductive organs. It merely gets into the human cell, drops off its little genetic message, which hijacks our DNA and tricks our DNA into replicating more of themselves. And then it goes from cell to cell. Bacteria, being much larger, get into a human body and, you know, use the available sugar and things around to reproduce and make more of themselves, without bothering our DNA or anything else. They're more or less living between the cells and multiplying.
So I guess what you're saying is they're both hitchhikers, and they're both looking for a nice, cozy host to hitch onto, right?
Yeah, that's true. And depending on, they can mutate, especially viruses, can mutate themselves very easily to adapt and change themselves to go from one species to another, like such as it's in a duck, and in a few months it's now in, I just read that raccoons can be carriers now. And so you're jumping from a bird to a mammal.
Well, viruses can actually be found in all animals at any time. Is that right?
That's true. And we carry a lot of them just that are relatively quiet and go on, such as, a good example is a cold sore. That's a herpes virus family, and it lives inside of our nerves, and under certain conditions, the virus activates itself, and you end up with a little sore on your lip, and it's there all the time. There are other viruses that will mutate out and break the rule of parasites, which is you never kill your host, and unfortunately, some viruses break that rule and kill the host and continue to spread the disease on.
Well, yes, your book, Gary, covers a brief history of some of these major influenzas. I guess the closest one that a lot of people would be aware of is the 1918 influenza, which they were just dragging bodies out of the houses so fast they couldn't make enough coffins to really put them in, because this kind of influenza kills very fast, fills up the lungs, and so on and so forth. So it's very dangerous, and we just haven't seen anything quite like it so far, but it's only a matter of time, from what I understand you saying in the book.
It took out, the estimates are 50 to 100 million people. They think it mutated in Kansas and then spread with the troop movements and went off to Europe with the troops and spread through the troops, subsequently ending the First World War, because the Germans didn't have anyone to produce weapons and armament for them, or they didn't have any recruits.
Yes, well, this H5N1 flu virus or avian virus that we're talking about here that comes from poultry and all kinds of birds is much more virulent and much more dangerous than the regular flu that people get from time to time over the winter season, and they line up every year to get a flu shot. And these flu shots, of course, are even just really guesses at which virus or viruses may be the ones in the next season, in the next year, that may be the ones that cause the most flus in human beings. But the H5N1 virus, we don't have any vaccine for. There is no real cure for it. And there probably can't be until it makes that jump into a form that will affect human beings. Are we on course on that?
Well, and the thing of it is that our current way of making the flu, we use chicken eggs, and we grow the virus in the eggs, and there's a whole process to that. But that entire process is maybe 70 to 100 years old. So consequently, today, if we can get a vaccine out there for the regular flu that's 50% effective, they think that's a big success.
Yes, well, I think you said that this H5N1 flu has already killed people in Vietnam, Thailand, and possibly Indonesia as well, and China. So it's already moving pretty quick, isn't it?
It has. The official count is somewhere around 400. The unfortunate thing is that back in around 2000 or so, China finally just came out and said, we've had the virus in our country for over 10 years now. So with the way the government in China is structured, we do not know how many people have died in China. In fact, the flu broke out near the Equian events in China a few days before the Olympics began, and the Chinese went out and killed every bird and chicken and duck that they could find for 50 miles around.
Well, that's a very good point you make there, Gary, because with air traffic today, with people traveling all over the world, if there had been a mutated form of this H5N1 virus in China, you would have had all the athletes from every corner of the globe, plus all the spectators and people that wanted to watch the games, and the Chinese people themselves. So in a matter of 24 hours, this thing could have been all over the planet. That's how fast things can happen with something like this if it does mutate.
And no one would be able to stop it. The only thing we can do today is to lessen the impact and try to survive. Our supply lines in the world today are razor thin. We don't have warehouses full of food anymore. We get an order for 200,000 boxes of potato ketchup, and we make that and we ship it out. We don't make and store. We don't do that anymore. It's just we do exactly by what the orders that are coming.
So you're referring to this just-in-time manufacturing program that most companies are on now, which cuts their costs down and their overhead for storage. But in this situation, it's really bad news, right?
That's exactly right. And when you look at just a can of beans today, it's hard to believe that a can of beans maybe involves 10,000 people. The people that make the beans, that cook the beans, that make the gasoline, that cut the trees down to make the paper, the people that make the paint, all these people are involved to make one simple can of beans. And back in 1918, you reached into a bag of beans and dumped them into a pot of water and boiled them, and you had beans. Today, we can't do that.
Well, I guess people listening would like to know when this could occur. Is it in the next year, 3 years, or whatever? There's no way of really knowing that. There's no way anybody can tell you that. But the thing is that these things go in cycles, don't they? And it could happen at any time. The first thing we need to do is start to prepare for something like this, whether it's this virus or another one.
Michael Evans, who writes for the Defense Edition in England, has stated that MI5, which is intelligence for England, lists the avian flu as the number one threat to the British Empire.
Well, in doing some of my research for the interview, Gary, I did find that the Security and Prosperity Partnership website, spp.gov, has a whole North American plan for outline for dealing with such a catastrophe, and I'm going to put that underneath your book so people can visit that as well, because that's another extra amount of information, and it also shows the seriousness that governments are taking regarding this potential drastic event.
Well, I think the Canadian version is better than our version. There's another website called safecanada.ca, and the Canadian version is better. Our version is to try to identify, quarantine the virus, and a few other little ridiculous things, but the main thrust is to maintain the infrastructure of the government. And basically, in between the lines, they're just saying, hey, folks, you're on your own.
Well, that's right, too, Gary. And you do mention it in your book that people should stock up with enough food and water and essentials for, at least 2 weeks. And basically just stay indoors, don't go outside. And what will happen is this thing will eventually move through the area and do whatever it does, and it's not going to be a pretty sight out there. There's not going to be anybody going to work. There may be no power. There may be no water pressure. Who knows? So you are definitely going to be mostly on your own, regardless of the plans that governments put in place. And remember that we still don't have a vaccine for anything like this yet. So it's you to say you're on your own, I think you're absolutely correct on that one.
Yeah, it'll be airborne. It'll be by touch. Naturally, it'll be human to human. In 1918, they decided that they realized that it will go through your town very fast, and that if you can remain indoors for 8 to 10 days and stay away from people, you have a good chance of surviving the outbreak. However, you are going to have to realize that there's going to be a breakdown of the infrastructure for 18 months to maybe 2 years, with intermittent supplies deliveries, intermittent medication deliveries. You may not have your fire and police will not be functioning because they don't have any fuel to do that. The United States government has a huge fuel reserve underground in Louisiana, and you know, they always point to that and go, look, we've got all this fuel reserve. Well, geez, it's crude oil. You got to pump that stuff out and then have somebody around in a cracking plant to crack that stuff to make gasoline. You know? Well, I mean, that's a totally stupid thing to store all that crude oil. Why don't we store the stuff that we need, like gasoline? Yeah, it would be. In 1918, people still had horses. They still had wood-burning stoves. The mail was delivered by hand. Banking was done by hand. There was electricity, but if it went out, you still had a few oil lanterns around you could light up. You knew how to, you know, butcher animals and things. Today, we're just totally lost. I mean, turn the power off in your house for 2 days and see what kind of an impact it has on your life.
Yes, well, it's just amazing. I remember the power outage that we had several years ago that went right through from Ontario here into New York State. And it was, we were without electricity for, I don't know, almost 24 hours in some places, and some places even longer. And if you ever experience that, you'll realize very quickly that nothing of the modern age works without electricity. And so you better have those candles ready, and you better have your propane stove or something to cook on, because you just don't know if that power grid could go down. Who's going to go and fix it when this major airborne illness is around? You just can't trust that that's going to be fixed anytime soon. So it's really essential to prepare.
It is, and it's you look around at how many people, do you have a radio in your house that, you know, you can put batteries into and listen to the news or something? We have big storms out here, and the power goes off and on, so we're pretty prepared. But, geez, one day the power went off, and I walked up and flicked the light switch. And I thought to myself, am I conditioned? You know, there's no lights in here, so I got up to turn the light switch on, and there's no power.
Well, Gary, because you are a medical doctor, I'd like to go over with you just maybe a few points on how this virus works and why it is so deadly, and just to get a little bit into the medical background of how this virus works and why it is something that is must be taken very seriously.
Right now the death rate is 62. They feel that it will probably have to mutate down to maybe a 20% death rate. They think that the 1918 virus was about a 10% death rate. That way, if you're only killing 10% of your population, you've got a better possibility of passing the virus on from human to human. But once the virus gets into your body and gets into your cells, your immune system gets turned on, and your immune system attacks that virus and the infected cell and destroys it. And it's such an immense immune response, especially because the viruses start in your lungs, that you actually dissolve your own lungs. And you could be dead within 8 hours.
Well, I know in your book you talk about something called the cytokine storm, which is basically a overreaction by the immune system to this particular virus. And really, it's your immune system overreacting that actually kills people. Am I correct on that?
It is. And in 1918, people would come into the hospital in the morning and they start to have a little cough and then start coughing up a little blood. And maybe by afternoon they were dead because they were by then coughing up large handfuls of blood, which was actually their lungs, that they were actually dissolving their lungs and dying. And people go, well, I want to take this medication to increase my immune system and things. You know, that may not be the thing to do. The best thing to do right now is stay away from anyone that's infected until it blows through. The other thing is there won't be a vaccine for another 15 years probably.
Well, we know we're all living in a world where we expect instant cures and instant products delivered to us immediately. And the Mother Nature just doesn't work that way. And 15 years is a long time. It's a big deal. So I hope my listeners are listening very carefully to what the doctor's saying, because you need to prepare for something like this. May not happen this year, may not happen next year, but you never know.
Well, this is an RNA virus. In other words, what the virus is carrying in itself are seven little genes that are RNA, not DNA genes. The AIDS virus is also an RNA virus. And look how many years we've been working to try to get a vaccine on that, and we haven't gotten anywhere on that one. And also this virus, this bird flu virus, if you try to use the old system with the chicken eggs, this virus kills the eggs before it even gets, the egg gets a chance to get working.
Well, what's the reason why these things seem to pop up from the Asian region of the world? Is it because a lot of the poor farmers there are living such close proximity to their livestock that the chances of diseases have a much greater chance of transferring themselves from their birds or whatever to the human? Is that why that is?
Yeah, that's true. That's why almost always our usual wintertime flu comes up out of Asia, because it's summertime there. The people are living close to the chickens and pigs, and so the mutation happens. Away it goes. I was just reading an article yesterday that because we have such a gigantic chicken industry in the world, that we have used, we use the same, the genetic material in those chickens is identical all the way through, and that there may be, defects in the immune system because we use the same chicken stock all the time. So we may pay for our cheap chicken because of the fact that the virus will get into them and mutate and take off.
Well, Gary, are the first infections going to occur because people are eating chicken that are infected with the avian flu, which is then transmittable to human beings? Is that the way it's going to work at first?
No, what will happen is that the mutation will happen very quickly in a bird. It'll go to a human will pick it up, and this virus, as a human starts coughing out the virus material, it will easily get into someone else's lungs and infect them. Currently, the virus, the way in its present state, has problems of going person to person, although there have been documented cases in Indonesia of possible person-to-person transmission. Once that starts, there's really no way to stop it. Everyone should look up Supari, S-U-P-A-R-I. She is the health minister of Indonesia, and she has probably, working with Al-Qaeda, going to be the person who's going to be responsible for releasing a mutation into the world. Yeah, Supari is Muslim. She has shut down all research on the bird flu in her country. The United States Navy had a research facility there for 30 years. She closed it and moved them out, too.
Oh, great. That's all we need is this thing to be politicized. My God. What are people thinking? It's unbelievable, yeah. Gary. This is something that normally nations share with no cost to everybody's benefit. And here we have this woman doing this. This is just absolutely amazing what is going on in the world right now. And that's going to be, it may actually come from there then, eventually.
They said that it's their country's right to own this virus and to not let anyone else look at it. And Supari even quoted my book and stated in the book that the United States wants to have their virus because we're going to militarize it and let it loose into the world to kill all the poor people. And I got that from an Australian broadcasting company, and I emailed them back, and I said, we can't even get a vaccine for the regular flu. Why in the world will we let this thing loose? It doesn't make sense. But if you're a Muslim and thinking that let's let this loose because maybe only our people will survive, that kind of thinking may go through in Indonesia.
Well, it's one thing you do bring up in your book, which people might find very strange but true, and that is that because this is an immune system virus, that the people that it will affect the most are the people with the best immune systems, not the worst. And we're talking about people here between somewhere around 20 and 40, as you mentioned in your book. It's just incredible.
That's true. The target death rate is going to be between ages of about 12 and maybe 25 or so, because they have such a great immune system that they'll melt their lungs. And this was seen in 1918, and it was a real puzzle for a long time, was why were the young and healthy people dying and the older ones surviving? And it was based on the fact that the immune systems were better in the young. A little sidebar on this is that the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta, Georgia, has reactivated the 1918 virus and has distributed it to laboratories for research, which is a horrible mistake.
Oh, really? Oh, great. These scientists are always coming up with great new ideas. Let's bring the 1918 flu virus back to check that over. I guess there's a reason for it, but there's also a possibility if it ever got out, it'd be in deep trouble again, or somebody stole it or whatever. One thing you do bring up in your book, Gary, which I think is very important for people to really lock in on, and that is the whole strain on infrastructure and the way we get and use everything in our society will just more or less be brought to a grinding halt for quite a long period of time. And I'd like to just get into that with you a little bit, because I think that's something that people must realize in this whole equation of this disease, that is a big factor that they need to prepare for.
Well, they were talking about, you know, at first when I was writing the book, about a disruption of the world gross product of being in the trillions of dollars. However, after seeing what has happened in the economic market in the world in the last month, trillions of dollars is probably not even a very good guess at it. Nevada, for example, we live on tourism, and that's going to completely evaporate. There's a good movie called The Postman, and in the movie not really sure what happened, but something happened, and society has been just torn apart. And once this thing gets going, the society will never be the way it is today.
Well, it's interesting with population, too, because I know that in about 1950, the total world's population was about 2.5 billion people. That was 1950. Now, 1918, I don't know what it is, but it was probably under 2 billion people, for sure. And look at how many people got taken out by the influenza virus there. Now we have we're getting close to 7 billion people on the planet. And if this thing or something like it comes along, it's going to take an awful lot of people out. It's just so that you're right, the society is would be changed forever and moving in another direction. That's for sure.
Well, it's happened before. 75,000 years ago, a volcano went off in Indonesia and caused a nuclear winter of about 5 years, and the number of people on the planet dropped down to just a few thousand. So 75,000 years ago, we just barely made it. And I think that with this overpopulation we have today, you know, maybe nature's found a way to thin out the herd again.
Well, yes, the whole thing is rather a little frightening, to say the least. And if you're not shaking in your boots now, listen to the program again. I think you'll find yourself shaking. At any rate, the main thing is, as Gary has been saying through the whole program, and that is get prepared. Make sure you and your family have enough food for 2 weeks or so and the bare essentials to get by, because preparedness has been shown over the years to be the difference between people who survive these kind of things and people that don't. So that's the main message, I think, that this very interesting book provides, and it gives you an understanding of what you would be dealing with this H5N1 virus. I think you also have a website that you can direct people to get your book. Is that right?
All right. It's pandemicdirect.com. And I'll say that again, pandemic, P-A-N-D-E-M-I-C, direct, D-I-R-E-C-T.com. And that has my book on the site. And I'd like to thank all the Canadians that have purchased my book so far and their nice emails that I've received from them.
And so until next time, and by the way, you can get Gary's book by clicking on his book cover photo on the Authors Audio website on the homepage, and it'll take you directly to his site where you can purchase the book. And until next time, this is Jake D. Steele saying, keep dreaming and happy reading. Bye for now.